Well, some of you have been asking, why haven't we provided any commentary or interviews on Russia's invasion of Ukraine this week? The truth of the matter is both Jim and I were out on vacation this week and decided to air a few interviews that we had conducted earlier this year. On that note, since we are still technically on vacation, instead of our usual hour-long weekend show, we are going to re-air our interview with Felix Zuloff from December of last year, where he predicted an imminent peak in the market and a decisive decline starting out in 2022. Much of what Felix says in this interview is very much in alignment with what we've been telling you, our listeners, since late last year. And in today's discussion, Felix not only provides his short-term outlook on the market, commodities, and other sectors, but also his longer-term outlook as well. And I do want to note one area where Felix does deviate from our own and what we've been telling you, our listeners, on our show over the past few months at least is on the commodity front, given that we've been expecting energy and commodity prices to continue heading higher and maintaining our overweight position in this area. That being said, the difference between what Felix says in today's discussion and what we've been saying is more of a question of tactical timing, since both Felix and we at Financial Sense Wealth Management are holding to a longer-term bullish outlook. So with that out of the way, and without further ado, we hope you enjoy today's interview with the notable strategist Felix Zuloff, which again originally aired on our weekday FS Insider podcast in December of last year.
FS Insider, a premium edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. Today's host is Senior Editor Chris Sheridan.
Felix Zuloff is the head of Zuloff Asset Management and Zuloff Consulting, where he provides institutional research and market strategy on the global macro environment. So Felix, last time we spoke at the beginning of this year in February, you'd explained then how you saw this as the fourth bull market cycle with a potential market peak in the 21 to 22 time frame. Given what has taken place this year, do you still think that we are looking at a peak in the market cycle now or next year?
I do believe that we are looking at a very important medium-term peak, but I do not believe that it's the end of this current market cycle. I think the market cycle will most likely stretch into 24, but what we are facing now is a medium-term top in the next few weeks, and then a very decisive decline. And this is because, first of all, I see the world economy weaker or slowing than the consensus. I think the overshooting of retail sales on the pre-pandemic trend by 16% in the US is an aberration and will be corrected, because the fiscal impulse that was so positive will turn negative in 22, negative by about 4 to 6%. This will dampen economic activity. Real personal income is now negative and not positive anymore. I think the rest of the world is slowing too, particularly China continues to slow, is in recession, and will most likely stay in recession into mid-year. And while they are loosening up the tight policies, they are not stimulating yet. I expect that from spring on only, not before. And all this tells me that the world economy and the U.S. economy will most likely disappoint in terms of growth, and particularly in the first half. And that leads me to believe that the commodity sector or the commodity complex that had such a strong run-up is due to correct also. So I could easily see crude oil going down to 50 or even somewhat below if the disappointment is large enough. And I think the authorities are not prepared for that yet. When you listen to Powell last night, he's painting another picture. Then on the liquidity side, which is the most important factor and driving the financial markets, we have two important things going on. First of all, the Fed is tapering. By end of March, they will not add any more liquidity to the credit system. This is in contrast to the last 2 years where they added $4 trillion. That's a marked difference. And then I think the international liquidity situation is also deteriorating. People are not noticing that yet, but the Chinese are not recycling their trade and current account surpluses into US treasuries. They are using those amounts, and that amounts to about $400 billion per year. They are using it to repay dollar-denominated loans. And when you create the loan, you create liquidity. And when you pay the loan back, you shrink liquidity. And that's going on underneath the surface, and nobody is noticing it. You see it in the statistics where you can countercheck that the U.S. banks and foreign banks in the U.S., how they lend to non-residents. And you see that they are not lending, they are shrinking their loan portfolio. And that really confirms what I've been saying about China. So I think we are facing a deteriorating liquidity situation. And on top of that, you will see the U.S. liquidity situation deteriorating. And on top of the Fed, you will also see that the U.S. Treasury that has injected about $1.7 trillion since March of 2020, because they ran down their account at the Fed to $140 billion, I think they are targeting $500 to $550 billion for that account. That means if they go back to target, they will take out another $400 billion of liquidity. So I definitely believe that we are facing a deteriorating liquidity situation, and that's the driving force. Usually, when a market corrects, you have a plain vanilla 8 to 12% correction or anything on that order. But we have had tremendous excesses of capital flow into equities. U.S. equities inflow was, and including equity products, was on the order of over $1 trillion in the last 12 months. And this compares to the same amount for the last 20 years combined. So this is an excess of a century. And usually when you go highly positioned, highly leveraged, high margin amounts outstanding into a correction, the surprises are usually on the downside. So it's very possible and conceivable that when we have usually a 10% correction, all of a sudden it could trigger a 20, 30% correction. And therefore, I think the first half of the year will most likely show a very serious correction, and that could shake the authorities. And instead of the interest rate hikes that the Fed has been forecasting, I think they will rather turn around and stimulate again around the middle of the year when the correction in the market arrives. And that should give us the next run-up to new highs. So I could see equity indices declining 30% and then go up 100% to the peak in 2024. And if the peak in 2024, 23 and 24 is a better economy, I think you will have another run in the commodity complex. You will have wages going higher, and you will then see the CPI probably around 10%. And at that time, you have higher bond yields, and you have a central bank, and probably around the world, that has no choice but to tighten. And that, I think, will be the end of the bull market that we have been seeing from 2009. And that will lead to a major crisis probably for a few years thereafter. So the big picture has been stretched a little bit, but nonetheless, I see a serious and painful decline in the first half of 2022.
Okay, so a very important medium-term peak over the next few weeks. So you're looking at this happening fairly imminently.
Yes.
With a decisive decline beginning of next year. And like you said, you know, we have seen really an absence of volatility since the COVID crash. And so we could be looking at something greater than an 8 to 10% correction, something as large as 20 to 30%. So in that case, it sounds like at this stage, you're fairly defensive, possibly raising cash or sitting on large amounts of cash, given what you see.
Absolutely. I have raised cash. I have hedged what I have left in the portfolio. It's much more defensive now. And I think the defensive sectors will do better. The utilities, the consumer staples will do much better during the correction than the high tech and the cyclicals stocks. And I'm looking for short selling opportunities over the next few weeks for a big decline. The breadth of the market has been weak for several months now. And when you go deeper into the market, you see that 65% of the NASDAQ stocks have already declined 20%, or what some people call a bear market decline. And actually, almost 40% of the NASDAQ stocks have declined 50% or more. And you do not see that because you have a handful of stocks in the S&P and in the NASDAQ that dominate that index and those two indices to such a large degree that you do not see what's going on under the surface. But it's really the picture of the generals running in one direction and the army moving backwards in the other direction. And this is not how you win the war.
Right. That's such a great analogy. There's a lot of pain that's taking place on the field. Investors are feeling that, but then they're looking at the index and thinking, well, it's still going up. But then once it finally turns and you see a selling climax or a selling frenzy. So it looks like that's sort of the stage that you're looking at for the first half of 2022 then.
You know, it goes even deeper than that, because if you look at the six stocks, I think it's Apple, Alphabet, Amazon, Microsoft, Netflix, those six stocks, they went up by 1,300% from the 2007 top, whereas the Standard & Poor's went up a little bit over 200%. And the World Equity Index ex-US went up 15% only. And this is dramatic, you know, and it's all really concentrated in one group. It's instead of the Nifty 50, it's probably the Nifty 15 or something like that that we are having. And they are the ones that will run up again in the next big rally from, let's say, mid-22 into early mid-24. But they are usually the last one to correct, whereas the broader market shows its weakness before and the fundamental problems.
Felix, since you are situated in Switzerland, and I know that you have a really good pulse of what's happening in Europe, what is your take of the energy crisis and how would you characterize it currently when we look at skyrocketing energy prices, electricity prices in Germany, UK, and elsewhere? How would you characterize this? Is this an energy crisis, and any thoughts on what we may see in the weeks and months ahead?
I think this is the beginning of a structural energy crisis. What we have seen, you know, we have had a commodity bear market since 2008 into the low of 2020, and it was a very severe bear market. And when you have a declining prices over such a long period, what then happens is that the producers and the miners begin to reduce their investments. So we have a period of many years of underinvestment in the commodity complex. And that includes energy, fossil fuel energy, because that particular industry has been bashed by everybody due to the hysteria that we have about climate. And therefore, I think we have underinvested. We have too tight capacities. And if I'm right in my scenario that authorities around the world will rather re-stimulate from mid-22 onwards to get the economy moving again and to get markets up, asset markets up again, then I think what we could see is that we have a huge run in energy prices. So I think 2 to 3 years from now, crude oil will most likely trade around $200. And that gives you the 10% plus CPI in the US. And the same goes for natural gas. And I think the Europeans, who have been most extreme in this energy thing by some turning off nuclear power, etc., they will wake up in a very rude way someday. And we will have blackouts because we won't have enough electricity and things like that. So I think we are in the very early stage of a structural energy crisis. And that energy crisis is actually the ingredient for the ensuing bear market after 24, because all the bear markets and recessions that we have had were not only due to monetary tightening by central banks, but also due to previously sharply rising energy prices. Energy is a cost factor for virtually everything, and that's important.
Yeah, definitely. And you can look at just prior cycles with, as you said, steeply rising oil prices, how they have marked prior market tops and forced central banks to rapidly pull liquidity from the markets. And so all of these things kind of come together. And you had mentioned last time how asset prices have become so important because authorities now understand that if you see a 20 to 30% correction, well, then that's 2 to 3% coming off GDP. They understand that. And it sounds like that's why you believe if this next correction that you're forecasting currently for the first half of 2022, that central bankers will blink, essentially, and they will back off their current hawkish stance for 3 rate hikes in 2022, and that the market may force their hand.
Yes, definitely. That's exactly how I see it.
Now, I know that a lot of investors and strategists follow your work when it comes to precious metals. I do have to ask you about this because, as you said, you think oil prices could get as high as $200 because of that structural underinvestment into fossil fuels. What do you see happening for precious metals during that time?
Structurally, I'm long-term bullish precious metals because of the policies that I see around the world. In monetary policy and fiscal policy, they are anything but sound. You know, they are just horrible. And that will, in the long run, be very bullish for gold, no question about it. But over the last few years, there is another anti-fiat asset class that has come into favor, and that's cryptocurrencies. And the cryptocurrency market is now about $2.5 trillion or something like that. And that's money that would have usually gone into gold. And that's why gold has not quite performed as well as many of the gold lovers have expected. I had a bear market signal or a sell signal for gold in August of 2020. And the next bull market or bullish signal to buy gold is due in the first quarter of 22. I think it will then trigger a run back up to the highs in the low 2000, but it's not the tremendous bull run that I still expect ahead. There is a very pronounced 8-year cycle in gold, and the low in that cycle is actually in 2024. So it is actually falling together with the peak in the stock market. So from then on, for 4 years into 28, you will have a tremendous run in gold. And I expect a much higher gold price than today. I cannot tell you whether it's $5,000 or $8,000 or something like that. And I think it's a time when the world economy is in deep crisis because it's the washout then after all the stimulating policies of the past 20 years will begin to correct in the real economy and in the credit system. So I expect a severe economic crisis after 24 to begin. And that goes hand in hand with the bull market in gold, because gold is a trusted asset long term that is outside of the credit system, outside of the economic system, outside of our banking system. And that's when I think the big run up in gold you will see. And I think silver will also participate in that.
Okay. So I think you said you have an expected buy signal for gold next year, but the greater run you're not really expecting until that 2024 to 2028 time period.
Yeah, I think what we have into the 24 period is a range trading between, let's say, 1700 and 2100. And I think the first quarter next year, 22, we will be at the lower end of that range. And that gives you a chance to run up to the higher end of that range. But it's most likely not the big breakthrough to the upside. Tactically, of course, anybody who loves gold long term must take a position at the low in the first quarter. And I will too, of course.
I want to ask you one last question, because this is something that we discussed last time, and that's China. Any thoughts on the difficulties that China is facing? Evergrande technically went into default just last week, and they're one of the largest property developers in China. During the heyday of their cycle back in 2011, they were the largest developer. Any thoughts on China and what they're facing?
China is facing a tough time. The demographics are changing like they right now, as they were changing in the early 90s in Japan. Same thing. The banking industry is at the same situation, as the Japanese banking industry was in 1990. They are maxed out. They have equity capital of 2%. Their return on assets are about 2%. Their official non-performing loans are about 2%. That means even on the official number of non-performing loans, they are not making any money. And the unofficial non-performing loan number is most likely much higher. So in reality, they are losing money and they cannot lend and finance high growth anymore. And what's going on right now in China is a credit crunch. You have to understand that 95% of the Chinese own their own home. And their biggest investment is in real estate. Over 90% of the Chinese savings are invested in the real estate market. And 25% of the real estate is empty, is not occupied. There have been a tremendous overbuilding, and it counted as GDP growth, but it doesn't get you a return. As long as real estate prices were rising, that was no problem. But now real estate prices are falling and you do not get any return and your balance sheet weakens and your debt outstanding or whatever stays the same. This is a problematic situation. And I think China is in a credit crunch. They will not allow a big slump like in 2008-09 in the US. They will support it. But either you have a big, sharp decline and a washout, or you have a milder and drawn-out affair that takes several years. And I think the Chinese are going for the long, drawn-out affair that takes several years. And that means really that China will not be able to show high growth in coming years. And therefore, China will not import as many goods in coming years as in the past. And that's very bearish news for the big export nations like some Europeans and emerging economies, etc. And China over the last 10 or 20 years has been the driving force and the locomotive for world economic growth. And that locomotive is gone for the coming years. And therefore, I think consensus expectations on the economy in general are far too high, not just for China, but for the world in total. Most analysts have not understood how serious the problem in China really is.
In the context of demographics, not only do we see falling demographics in China, but we also see it in Europe. And this is a global problem. Clearly, in the emerging markets, we see more favorable demographic trends. But the emerging markets alone, ex-China, are not enough to offset this large trend that we see underway. And so you had said when we last spoke with you that you believe that this is going to continue driving large amounts of fiscal stimulus by global policymakers to offset this because the debt loads are too high and they have to keep growth at all costs. Otherwise, you know, the debts become too much of a burden and that leads to a bigger issue down the road. So, do you expect to see that spending carrying us forward until we get to around 2024? Is that when you ultimately see things coming to some sort of crisis point?
I think the fiscal deficits will remain high in historical comparison terms. And I think that is true also for the period after 24. What I think going into 24 is that the whole push that authorities are providing on the fiscal and particularly also on the monetary side is pushing rather prices than real economic growth. So they are pushing demand And there is a supply problem. We have a supply problem in commodities, as I just elaborated. And the supply problem will also be there in agricultural goods. Unlike the whole world who thinks the world is warming, I think that cycle has peaked and the world is cooling. And you will see in coming years lower harvests. And what that means is demand keeps growing, but supply is shrinking. And that gives you a big push on the price side. So it's basically a supply side driven advance. And there is nothing the authorities can do about. And all the policies they do with repression and more regulation and intervention and manipulation is really not helping the supply side. You know, only free market economies help the supply side. You make it attractive for an entrepreneur to create more supply, and then he goes. But if you intervene and manipulate and you punish him by more and more regulation due to climate and whatever, it's just the opposite effect. And therefore, when you have then rising prices, a CPI of 10%, the central bank at some point of time must tighten, and then tighten for real. And I think then the whole house of cards, the whole credit structure will shake. And I think then we will probably face a 2 to 3 year major economic crisis. And in that crisis, the government share of the economy will go up because the government will come and try to support the system on the fiscal side. What it all means is that government debt has only one way to go, higher. And of course, we have several countries, governments that are already bankrupt. And the policies, particularly in Europe, what we see is really a policy to postpone the bankruptcy of some governments. It has nothing to do with a stability-oriented monetary policy to protect savers. It is much more to protect the bankrupt governments that they can continue operating. And all of this will come all to the surface when this bull market is over. Bull markets have a habit of bringing up a lot of good things and good news, and bear markets just do the opposite. So let's enjoy the bull market ride for the next 2 years. Be prepared to defend your portfolio in the first half, and then ride it to the highs in 24. And then we talk again, of course.
Once again, Felix Zuloff, head of Zuloff Asset Management and Zuloff Consulting, provides institutional research and market strategy on the global macro environment. Felix, what is the best way for our listeners to follow more of your work?
There is a homepage. It's one word, felixzuloff.com. And you get to our homepage and you can require our market letter that we send out every 2 weeks also to investors. And we also provide webinars, occasional webinars, where we explain our case and the timing and the direction that we expect in markets.
Well, Felix, it was a pleasure speaking with you on our show again and getting an update from you on your outlook. And we definitely look forward to having you on the show again.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris. Always a pleasure. Take care.
So as we discussed in today's interview, Felix is expecting a very important medium-term peak over the next several weeks, with the decisive decline beginning of next year in 2022. As he mentioned, the fiscal impulse is going to be turning negative next year. That will dampen economic activity. He sees the rest of the world slowing, and he thinks that we're going to see a large number of disappointments, particularly in the first half. Along with that, he also believes we're going to see a correction in the commodity complex. So putting all these things together, he thinks we could be looking at something greater than an 8 to 10% correction, and possibly even something within the 20 to 30% range for that first half of next year. At that point, he does believe global central banks are going to pivot or blink in the face of a market correction, given its large impact on economic growth. The Fed will likely delay hiking rates or put off the number of hikes that they have planned. This will set up the next leg up in the markets before we finally see, according to his view, a CPI, consumer price inflation, around the 10%. That's the official number, of course. We're probably at that unofficially, but the official number going from where we're at, just under 7% now at 6.8%, to 10% in the 2024 timeframe, and that this would also be possibly accompanied by an unfolding energy crisis impacting not just Europe, but the globe as a whole. And he said, you know, we could see oil prices as high as $200 a barrel. For those of you that may not be familiar with Felix Zuloff, he has been a longtime guest on Financial Sense NewsHour. He was also a member of the Barron's Roundtable for 30 years. One of the things that Felix is very well known for is having avoided many of the bear markets that have taken place during his career, whether or not that's the 87 crash or the 2008-2009 crash. He has often seen these things ahead of time. And just to tie what we spoke with him about earlier this year in February, he was bullish on the market, saying even the possibility of us seeing a major market melt up and a buying climax into later this year, that is where we are today. And at this point now, he is clearly shifting back to the bearish side. And as you know, we have been discussing on our show, we also have turned quite cautious on the markets, given a number of the very same things that Felix mentioned in today's interview. Falling global liquidity, declining economic growth. We've posted a number of indicators on our website and also through our YouTube videos discussing this. So those two things are going to be coming together as we look into 2022, and is one reason, along with Felix Zuloff, that we have turned cautious on the market and are also holding a decent cash buffer. That concludes our weekend edition of the Financial Sense NewsHour. To speak with our financial planning and wealth management team, give us a call at 888-486-3939 or go to financialsense.com and click where it says Contact Us. If you aren't already a subscriber to our weekday podcast and would like to listen to more of our content, where we regularly interview book authors, industry experts, and strategists from around the globe, go to Financial Sense and hit the subscribe button. On behalf of Financial Sense NewsHour and the Financial Sense Wealth Management team, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.